what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie, the Radio Chickie Bellis, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guests that you'll find anywhere on internet radio. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
All right, and welcome. Oh, I don't even have a light on. Here we go. It might help to show my face a little bit here. Talk about being fast backwards today, and I can't get the other light to come on. So I hope everyone likes the look of my belly. Okay, come on, light. There we go. There we go. There we go. We're never going to get a smooth opening to the show, ever. Welcome to another adventure here on Southern Sense. You're listening live on southernsense.net, as well as all the other social networks we appear on. I'm your hostess with the least most is the radio chicken, Annie, and along with my co-host, who's laughing his ass off at the moment, Curtis C.S. Bennett.
All right. Yeah, we don't need that. We don't need a smooth opening. We just tumble into it. But grace.
That we do. I mean, there's so much to talk about. So much has been going on this past week. It makes your head spin. And it turns out that a staffer in Trump's organization did a little bit of a screw up. He laid the wreath at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier yesterday to honor the 13 that were killed in the fall of Kabul. Thank you, Kamala Harris and President Biden, which she claimed she was the last person in the room that caused the death of 13 American military. But there's an area in Arlington Cemetery, which I'm sure you're very familiar with, Curtis, Area 60, where no one is allowed to post pictures from there. They're for family and intimate people of the deceased.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a staff member took some photos because he was posing by the grave of one of the fallen with the family, and they asked him to pose for the picture. Well, it turns out the staffer had been taking pictures also and posted it. I don't know if it was up on TikTok or one of the social networks, which is a no-no. And it's not strictly enforced. But a member of Arlington Cemetery had approached the staffer, and there was some sort of a exchange between the two of them. It's basically a he said, she said moment at this point. But it is good that we get the word out there that there should be respect paid in certain areas of Arlington or any cemetery, not just Arlington, but any, with respect to the family that remained behind. Maybe the staffer was wrong, and maybe the member of Arlington Cemetery was wrong. We don't know, but we know a mistake was made. And hey, let's walk away from it. But instead, the other campaign is making a huge deal out of it. And this is what we've gotten down to, dirty politics.
Of course. The way I look at it, there should be something in that area saying no photos allowed. You know, that helps.
Well, that would help. Supposedly a handout was passed around, whether or not the staffer got it or not. Whether or not they got the word that, hey, no, this is an off limits area. This is not to be posted on social media. Someone missed the memo. Someone. And whoever was responsible for making sure that event went off without a hitch, it falls on their shoulder too, because obviously this staffer was not properly instructed.
So I mean, that's the problem with social media today. People can take your picture and you don't even know it and post it on social media. And then you hear about it from a friend.
Yeah.
You didn't give permission or anything.
I can't tell you how many times I've had that happen. It's like, all right, fine. Let it go. And most of the time you just simply say, let it go. Many times you don't even know it's out there. Mm-mm. I mean, I've had it where even my websites, this show was copied by someone else and put up underneath another person. Mm. And I've had to go into go over to where the web hosting is and say, listen, this is a forged account. I mean, I've had it on YouTube, on Facebook, on several other different social websites where I didn't even know that someone was imitating me. I mean, that's a badge of honor. Mm-hmm. But, however, this is my name, my reputation, and I will not let someone smear it.
It may come to a point where when we have, you know, invited guests to our homes, we have to give them a copy saying, like, if you do take pictures, you know, ask our permission if you want to post them, you know, and if we don't give you our permission, don't post them on social media, because people, they just do it automatically without thinking.
You know, have we gotten to that point in our society now?
I think so.
It is a shame. It is an absolute shame that our society has now devolved to that point. That we have to turn around to say to someone explicitly, well, I really don't want my face out there. Please don't put it out there.
Right. And warn them, if they do, I'm sending my lawyer after you, because it was in my house. So that's not like in a public domain where they can get away with it.
It is a shame. It is an absolute shame. I mean, you take a family photo and you got, say, maybe you have a family reunion and there's 30 people in the photo. Do you go to each and every person in that was in that photo, even if you don't have access to any contact information? Is that what our society has gotten down to?
Like I said, if it's in the public domain, you don't have a case. I'm taking many pictures in the public arena near a fountain or something. There were other people there, but the person that I wanted to get, or even just the sculpture, you got people in there. You don't need their permission, you know. But like I said, in your home, on your property, that's different.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame that we have become so. I'm trying to think of the proper word, but so picayune that, hey, I mean,
but you got to protect your privacy, you know. Yeah, what they call it, the eyes in the sky type society, being monitored all the time.
Yeah.
Orwell's.
Was George Orwell's 1989. Yeah. Anyway, folks, we got ourselves a great show lined up. We're hoping that we're going to have Mark Tapscott join us. He's the DC correspondent and chief editor for the Epoch Times, or Epoch Times. And we also have former Ambassador Stanley Escudero, who's going to be joining us. He was the former ambassador to Tajikistan, Uzbekistan, and Azerbaijan. He will be joining us at the second half of the show. So we have a lot to talk about, a lot to do today, and I hope everyone will sit back and enjoy it. And today's show is dedicated to Agent Eleazar Ramos Velez of the Puerto Rican Police Department. His end of watch was Friday, March 29th, and here is his dedication.
Fox 13 News at 9 starts now.
Close it down out there.
We have a family that's grieving now. We have a wife that's grieving now.
How bad is it that somebody gonna come and shoot at a police?
We need urgent action from this whole community.
We ask our community to continue to pray for our officers.
Officer Josh McKinney was killed early this morning in the line of duty. It happened while he was investigating a suspicious vehicle. By the time the morning was over, two more officers were injured, and the suspect tonight is dead. Thanks for joining us as we continue to follow what's been our top story all day. I'm Daniel Wilkerson, Daryl Green, and Darcy Thomas have the night off. Tonight, the community is paying respects to that fallen officer. The Memphis Police Department has identified him as Joseph McKinney. Fox 13's Jack Bilyeu is live at MPD's Rain Station tonight, where Officer McKinney's car has been turned into a memorial. Jack, he left behind a wife, a young daughter. Good evening to you.
Yeah, good evening, Daniel. The Memphis Police Association says Officer McKinney was only 26 years old. He'd been with the department about 4 years, first out of the Mount Moriah station, but most of that tenure here at the Raines station.
Everybody loved the guy. He's really well liked.
The flags are at half mast at MPD's Raines station. Beneath those lowered flags, Officer McKinney's car is covered in flowers from friends and fellow officers who came by to pay their respects.
It's absolutely the worst part of this job.
Matt Cunningham, president of the Memphis Police Association, says officers across the department are heartbroken, especially those who were on the scene when McKinney was shot. Video taken at Regional 1 shows officers learn McKinney had died and embrace each other, mourning their fallen friend and co-worker.
It's going to be a lot of trouble for the officers at the Raines station where they worked. We're going to have to deal with the aftermath of the mental trauma that they're dealing with. There's a lot of sadness down there.
Tributes to McKinney have been pouring in. His picture was put on the Jumbotron at Friday night's Grizzlies game. In a statement, the Memphis Police Department wrote in part, "Officer Joseph McKinney exemplified the highest standards of courage and dedication, and his memory will forever inspire us to serve and protect our community honorably." His alma mater, Munford High School in Tipton County, also paid respects in a post to Facebook, writing that he was part of the band and was known to his classmates as Rusty. He graduated in 2016, and less than 10 years out of high school, his life was cut short.
He was just starting out in life, just starting out in his career, we're so short on manpower. He's exactly the officer that we need here. You know, someone that comes here at a young age and ready to start a career and, you know, spend 2 decades to help clean this city up.
Well, MPD is encouraging people to put flowers or notes on Officer McKinney's squad car as a tribute. The Police Association is also running a fundraiser for his family. You can find that link on our website, fox13memphis.com. Now, we'll be live out here again coming up at 10, where a prayer vigil is expected to take place. Daniel?
Jack, a sad day for the Mid-South and also for the community of law enforcement officers. Jack Beal, you starting our live coverage off at 9. Jack, thanks.
Officer Joseph McKinney was a shining example of courage, integrity, and selflessness. He put his life on the line.
We're glad you joined us tonight at 5. I'm Rudy Williams. Well, today, family, friends, and Memphis police gathered for the funeral of Memphis police officer Joseph McKinney at Hope Church. Now, McKinney was shot and killed in the line of duty on April 12th while responding to a suspicious vehicle call. The district attorney's office says McKinney likely accidentally died from gunfire from a fellow officer during a resulting shootout. Our Jay Shakur with moving moments from the service today this afternoon. Jay, what stood out to you?
Rudy, a mixture of Officer McKinney's officers, co-workers remembered the 26-year-old for his dedication, a man always serving his community with a smile on his face. Officer McKinney worked at MPD for 4 years, serving out of the Raines Police Precinct. The department and the city of Memphis honored McKinney's sacrifice in several resolutions. Speakers also remembered fondly his time on the force, his love for laughter, and his ability and willingness to step in and help those he served with. McKinney leaves a loving family, including a fiance and a young child.
He wasn't just a good police officer. McKinney was a good partner. And when you're a good partner, that means you are dependable. That means that when I'm in trouble, you're gonna show up. When I call for help, I know you're coming.
He had a kind soul. He'd always be there for anyone that needed it. He would give you the shirt off his back and the shoes off his feet.
Also today, flags at the Tennessee State Capitol are flying at half staff in remembrance of Officer McKinney. Rudy?
Mm-hmm. All right, Jay, thanks a lot. Well, before and after the services for McKinney, people from across the Mid-South paid their respects to McKinney's legacy in law enforcement. Our Leah Williams continues our team coverage tonight in East Memphis, right outside of Memorial Park Cemetery, where Officer McKinney was laid to rest just a short while ago. And Leah, many people didn't know Officer McKinney at all, but just wanted to show their support today.
That's correct, Rudy. Some people that we talked to said they didn't know him personally, but they wanted to offer condolences and pay tribute to the fallen officer. Now, hundreds of people showed up to Hope Church and here to Memorial Park to say their final goodbyes. Friends, family members, law enforcement, and community members all came out to honor the life of Officer Joseph McKinney, some even wearing blue in support of the fallen officer.
The blue represents solidarity, both with the family, with MPD, with each other.
It was my way of showing that I support our all of our officers.
His service was at Hope Church Monday afternoon, followed by his final ride and burial at Memorial Park on Poplar. Leslie Taylor with Memphis Crime Beat says she's saddened and heartbroken by Officer McKinney's death on the line of duty.
The officers told us about seeing their fellow officer on the ground, mortally wounded, and how can you have a response to that? It's so awful.
That's why many people who didn't know the officer personally still wanted to show up here to say thank you.
This shouldn't happen. They're out there to help us.
While these Memphians say the officer's life was taken too soon, they also hope McKinney's death will be a driving force for change.
We support them. We want to make sure something changes with public safety.
Officer McKinney was just 26 years old. He leaves behind a 4-year-old daughter and a fiance. Live in East Memphis, I'm Leah Williams.
All right, Leah, thanks a lot. A day full of emotion indeed. Well, a fundraiser for McKinney's family continues tonight. More than $169,000 already raised on Facebook since McKinney was shot and killed in the line of duty 10 days ago. If you'd like to donate, we've got a link at abc24.com/now.
Let it be said, when we finished this race, we kept them free. We led with grace, let it be seen. From sea to shining sea, beautiful America, living our legacy. Oh, father, mother, sister, brother, oh, we gotta learn to love each other. For the next generation, let us be known as people of honor, humble and bold, faithful through fire. Let us hold firm to our convictions with wide open hearts, eager to brother, oh, sure when our time has come. We gave them hope, we made them strong. Let it be said, when we finish this race, we kept them free, yeah, we led with grace.
Welcome back to another adventure here on Southern Sense, along with me, Annie, your host and producer of Southern Sense, as well as my co-host, oh, so adorable, Curtis C.S. Oh. And Caroline's in the background going, what's she saying about my husband?
Yeah, that's a very moving tribute. In light of the fact that we lost an officer last night, I believe, in Texas, and two are recovering.
Ah, I did not hear about that.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
One got killed.
All right.
Three got shot.
For those that listen to the show, that a lot of our dedication comes from the Officer Dan Memorial page. And I do give them a shout out for the hard work they do to give the dedication and the time they do to honor and remember every single fallen member of the law enforcement community. It's Officer Dan Memorial Page, ODMP.org. You can always check that out there. And I have stood in formation at funerals from too many friends of mine that have fallen in line of duty, and I will never forget them. And I will continue to honor the men and women that do give their lives for this nation and for the members of our public. That said, if anyone wants to know what the heck is going on, I was a little behind in doing my show notes. I spend days and at times putting stuff together to put the show together. And usually the Thursday night before our show on Friday, it is where I just bury myself in just putting all the notes together. And last night was a little bit different. I made myself one heck of a kick-ass margarita.
Oh, man.
The notes didn't get put together as well as I would have wanted to. But one of the main things we're talking about today, and I think we should delve into this, is Kamala Harris's final interview. She finally did an interview, on-camera interview, supposed to be off the cuff. Of course, she had notes put in front of her. Questions were given to her ahead of time. And she brought her vice presidential nominee in with her to give her moral support, which makes me wonder, what type of a president would she be if she didn't have this big, burly guy next to her to help her make the decisions? She wants to be president of the United States. You need to think on the fly, think on your feet, and think immediately. You need to exude confidence. You need to exude. What's the word I'm trying to think of? Anyway, I'm not saying
an air of authority.
Yes,
exude an air of authority.
And she does not have that.
Leadership, I mean, and all that.
She's what? All of 5'2". So am I. I'm actually 5'3", but I grew about 3/4 of an inch when they fused my neck to put a little height to me. I'm not much more than 5'2".
And I'm gonna tell you,
you don't need to be a bully to show that you have confidence and power. You need to have the confidence and power. Otherwise, you're not going to show anything. And she exudes weakness.
I have a high school department head, language department head, who I think exudes more authority and she's just she has this strength about herself and no nonsense, but she could be charming too. Carmela has none of this.
No. Where's she got her cackle? Her laugh? Mm. Is that what she's all about? When she can't answer a question, then out comes the cackle. Because you can tell that's nerves.
Oh, yeah. And you can't take a person like that real serious and serious matters.
And now you want to go against Z? You want to go against Putin? You want to show that you want to end the war in Ukraine and you're going to go head-to-head with Zelensky? He's going to laugh his butt off. I mean, how do you show power when Cuba is welcoming the Chinese and Russian into Guantanamo Bay? We have a base there. And there is a Russian warship and a Chinese submarine sitting in the bay in Cuba, in Havana. And you want to show power and you allow this just 90 miles off our coast?
You know, we know they're there. And, you know, that's not the point that we are able to monitor them and whatnot, but it's that they're so open about it. You know,
we know that there are terrorists in our nation that came across the border under Biden-Harris. It's their watch. They let them in. They're saying 20 million illegal aliens now exist within our nation. We're a nation of, what, 300 million?
Mm-hmm.
And you got approximately 10% are illegal aliens? And of which we know those that are on the terror watch list are inside our nation? I'm hearing from confidential sources that within less than a year, maybe even within the next 6 months, there will be a terrorist attack on our nation from within, from these terrorists within our border. We have Chinese of military age that have come across the border illegally. We have those of Middle Eastern descent that have ties to Hezbollah, Hamas, and all the other ISIS, whatever you want to call it, the flavor of the month is that they have out there. We know that they're here. We have narco terrorists from Venezuela, Colombia. They're in our cities breaking into apartments, taking over entire apartment buildings.
Oh, you saw that?
I mean, is any of us safe within our own homes at this point in time? We have to ask ourselves. You know, it's funny, for those that have not followed the show, I am a newlywed, husband number three. first one I divorced, second one passed away, a man I was with for 30 years. But I got married in December, and when he moved in with me, he has his own firearm, I have mine, and he said to me last night, he goes, you know, do you have the insurance coverage should you end up in a situation where you have to use your weapon? And yes, I do. I do. I have Delta Force security, which you can get through a concealed carry magazine. And I turned around last night and he said, you know what? I'm putting you on the policy. I called him up. Bing, bang, boom, done. Done. And it's not expensive. I think I'm paying something like $29 a month. And they give you an ID card. You get into a situation, and God forbid you have to defend yourself or someone protect someone else's life. They give you a little business card and say, listen, you dial 911 first, then call us. And we'll be there.
I wonder if that would have worked for that couple that tried to defend their house and were, you know, in trouble with the law because of the mob that came through the community.
Yes. I
wonder if that would have helped them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It may not be cleared up overnight. You may end up having to go to court, but they will be there every step of the way with you. Matter of fact, I should turn around and contact and say, listen, I'm doing you a free commercial. But you don't have to use Delta Defense. There's a lot of others out there. There's one on TV. So that's what prompted him to ask me. There was a commercial on TV, concealed something or other. And there's others out there. You don't have to just go through Concealed Carry Magazine, which is USCAA. That's their organization. The United States Concealed, whatever it is, I forget. USCAA is the organization through which I get my Delta Defense. But I haven't had to use it. But I know that with confidence that should I end up in a situation. Now, I'm trained. You're trained. Now, you're trained in the military, but I'm trained as a street cop. So which makes it a little bit trickier for me because I know what I can and cannot do. There's a lot of people out there that don't that are carrying that don't have the knowledge they should, which is why I encourage them to take a class. Go to a certified specialist. Find out in your state, because here in South Carolina, it's SLED. I don't know what it is in Florida, but every state has an organization that will help you with getting your permit. And you have to go through whatever class it is, usually. And I encourage that. I really, and actually, in fact, I should take a refresher course. Brain farts today. I haven't had breakfast or lunch yet, so guys, I'm a little slow in the uptake.
And it's Friday.
It is Friday.
We blame it on Friday.
Yeah, fried head, fried egg. At least I can make fun of myself, you know.
And I have scrambled eggs today.
Yeah, I don't know. We were talking about Kamala Harris, and now I just got completely off.
Yeah.
Oh, we were talking about the unsecured border and having terrorists and known criminals. Now, how do you lose approximately 300,000 children? How do you lose them? This is what Kamala Harris has done. These children have come across the border, got dumped into slave labor, sexual trafficking. A kid, a little baby kid. And I mean, it's one thing if you're an adult and you choose to go into that profession, but to force an innocent child, their childhood forever taken away and destroyed. What's going to happen to them when they become adults? What's going to happen to them if they survive into adulthood? If they survive. And this is what she has done. And this is who you want as president of the United States. A woman who claimed she was the border czar, and now suddenly she wasn't the border czar. Yes, she was, and then she wasn't. And she goes within 300 miles of the border. Oh, yes, she visited the border.
Yeah, it's all about, you know, holding on to power, not really doing anything, but, you know, putting on airs and optics like you are working for the people.
Yeah.
While all the time their agenda is undermining our freedoms and our rights and our defenses.
Well, I want to give out a shout out because there was a gentleman I saw in the grocery store, Harris Teeter, yesterday. So if you're listening, I don't know if he is or is not. The gentleman was walking through Harris Teeter and I caught part of the T-shirt. And it wasn't until I went outside I caught the rest of it. He said, "I'm voting for the felon." So, sir, you're in Harris Teeter in Beaufort, South Carolina yesterday. If you're listening, God bless you. I'm voting for the felon. That's my segue into Jack Smith has now re-indicted President Trump on the very same charges that got tossed out. Now, tell me what has changed with Jack Smith that allows him to re-indict him when the charges were thrown out, when Jack Smith is assigned as a special prosecutor. However, he was not confirmed by the Senate. So he's not anyone's special prosecutor. He's just some lame-brained attorney that someone shoved into a position that he does not belong in, has not been appointed to, is not entitled to, indict the president on the same charges that got tossed out. Someone, please explain that to me.
Not only that, I was under the impression the Supreme Court had a ruling against what he was doing.
Exactly. Exactly. So
laws don't matter to them. Decisions by higher courts don't matter to them, you know, unless it's in their favor.
Legal precedent does not matter to them. Mm-mm. And I'm sending Mark a message, letting him know that we're waiting for him. It went into the wrong spot. Of course, it went into the wrong spot. Oh, here we go. Sending him a message, letting him know that he's due to call in. But with all the crazies that's going on in D.C. right now, I'm sure the people at the Epoch Times are running around like crazy, trying to get all these stories in. I mean, this is what he posted. Actually, today, this article is up on the Epoch Times, or as I say, Epic Times. The watchdog sues the Department of Justice records on surveillance of congressional staff. And this is what he posted today. I don't know if he's going to be able to call in because, like I said, it's all heck is breaking loose. And I'll read the article so people can get the full idea of what's going on here. And Mark wrote today in the Epoch Times, which you can find at theepochtimes.com. A nonprofit government watchdog wants a federal judge to pull back the curtain on illegal surveillance of Capitol Hill staffers. A nonprofit group filed a suit on Tuesday, 3 days ago, in federal court seeking to force the Department of Justice, oh, the sweet old DOJ under President Obama, I'm sorry, Biden, Freudian slip, not, to make public documents about the government's surveillance of a bipartisan group of congressional staff investigators. The group previously submitted five Freedom of Information Acts, FOIAs, as we know it, requests for the DOJ records concerning the surveillance that began in 2016. Gee, who took office in 2016? Gee, that wasn't Obama. That wasn't Biden. Oh, you're right. That was President Trump. Funny how this goes on with Trump. So it's not only the fact that they have the Russian hoax, but now the DOJ, while he is now president, is playing games with him. Okay? The DOJ acknowledged the request, but never provided the documents. Oh, surprise, surprise, folks. Surprise, surprise. A spokesman for the DOJ did not respond to a request for comment. Gee, why am I so surprised about this? Surveillance was accomplished via government demands on Google and other internet service providers. Gee, didn't Zuckerberg just come forward admitting to the fact that the DOJ and other government agencies were forcing Facebook, Meta, whatever you want to call it, and X and YouTube to censure us? Oh, yeah, right. And that's, let's see. I have three YouTube accounts canceled, and I think two or three Facebook accounts canceled, because God forbid, I mentioned COVID. I talked about the vaccines. It didn't matter the fact, every single time I did, I specified, speak to your medical professional before you make a decision. It didn't matter that my personal opinion is my personal opinion, but heaven forbid. So now, why am I surprised that they would do this to the sitting president of the United States and the staffers on both sides of the aisle? Okay, let's go further. Surveillance was accomplished via government demands on these services for copies of correspondence and related documents by multiple congressional investigators. The court filing includes copies of subpoenas issued by the DOJ to Google and other service providers, seeking a broad range of records related to their accounts. The Empower Oversight Group, which filed the lawsuit, is a nonprofit foundation formed and now led by two veteran congressional investigators, Tristan Levitt and Jason Foster. Mr. Levitt was a senior counsel, now this is an attorney, for the House Committee on Oversight and Accountability. Now, why doesn't attorney-client privilege come into play here? It goes further. And Deputy Special Counsel for the U.S. Office of Special Counsel. Mr. Foster was a senior counsel attorney to Senator Charles Grassley, the Republican out of Iowa, and investigative counsel for the Senate Judiciary Committee. These are both attorneys. And attorney-client privilege was violated. Okay? The DOJ subsequently asked federal courts to bar the internet firms from informing the staffers being surveilled. Now, hello, how can you protect your client when you can't even protect yourself? In addition to the 5 4-year requests, the group opposed the DOJ motions asking the courts to impose the non-disclosure order on the internet firms. And I think Jeffrey Zuckerberg coming forward and making that public statement about being forced into censoring conservative outlets, I think blew the cap off of this. In its Tuesday filing, the group said Mr. Foster learned in October of 2023 that the DOJ had served a subpoena on Google in 2017 for records of a Google email address and two Google voice telephone numbers connected to Mr. Foster's family telephones and official work phone at the U.S. Senate. Does that not just blow your mind? I mean, you're supposed to be secure in your person and papers according to the Constitution. Now, this now extends to telephone numbers, to email accounts, and the DOJ just violated their constitutional rights. Not only that, the rights of their family and their clients.
So, what is Congress going to do? The Republican-led Congress? I mean, are they just going to have a little That's show true. Like they're going to do something and then nothing happens again?
Well, let's see what happens this November 5th. Now, it goes on further. At the time, in 2017, Mr. Foster was chief investigative counsel to the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee, and he was responsible for directing congressional oversight investigations into waste, fraud, abuse, and misconduct at DOJ. So the very investigative arm investigating the DOJ instead turned and used their tactics as weapons against this group. It further goes on, he subsequently learned that other congressional staffers from both sides of the aisle were included in the surveillance being conducted by the DOJ, according to the group. After receiving notice from Google, Mr. Foster learned that several other accounts listed on the subpoena belonged to other staffers, both Republicans and Democrats, for U.S. House and Senate committees also engaged in oversight of the DOJ. Empower Oversight said in its motion, opposed to the DOJ's request for non-disclosure orders and to unseal the documents. Empower Oversight claims that the surveillance of the staff investigators' email and other communications compromised the anonymity of the DOJ whistleblowers. Now, remember the FBI was coming forward, whistleblowers coming into Grassley's office, who were cooperating with Congress in exposing waste and fraud in government. An amicus brief in support of Empower Oversight motion to unseal the documents was filed on behalf of the Government Accountability Project by its legal director, Tom Devine, who argued that the continued enforcement of the non-disclosure orders would interfere with Congress's ability to educate itself, learn about other things, and executive branch misconduct in violation of the constitutional separation of powers. The present suit recalls a 2014 incident in which the CIA director John Brennan, who we've spoken about many times, the Muslim, publicly apologized for his agency's illegal surveillance of the Senate staffers after it was confirmed in a 6,700-page report by the Senate Intelligence Committee. Much of that report remains classified and unavailable to the public. The CIA surveillance consisted mainly of agents conducting unauthorized searches of Senate investigative staffers' official computers. Whoa. Hmm. Whoa. This is a blockbuster. And since Mark Tapscott is not answering my text message, it means that he definitely is tied up. And this is an article that just came out today. Just today. Let's see what the mainstream, or we should say lamestream media, does about this.
Put it on the back burner.
I mean, as always. This is so wrong on so many levels. Where do you start? Where do you start to even try to unravel this?
They'll just say it's, we're making a mountain out of a molehill. It's nothing to this. Nothing to this.
No. Don't pay attention to the man behind the curtain. It's the Wizard of Oz. Don't pay attention. Pay no attention. I mean, holy cow. If members of the Senate Judiciary Committee cannot be safe from illegal government prying, who in this nation is safe?
No one. I mean, think about this. Since 2016, we've had breaches like Hillary Clinton, bleaching her drives and things like that. Nothing happens, no consequences, and a lot of other things since then. And people are just tired of all these major events going down on the left, and it's well documented, but nothing ever happens. Nobody ever gets, adjudicated for what they do that's illegal and against the law. And it's frustrating for our side, but let something happen on our side and they're all over it.
Well, this is where we need organizations like this Empower Oversight Group. And on a sad note, I do have to bring this up. Our friend Andrew Adrodzinski of Open the Books passed away this week. He was only 55 years old. Mm. And this is an organization that exposed a lot of waste and abuse in government. And it is a huge loss for all of us that he had passed away. This is a man that has competed in the Chicago Marathon 8 times. And the last person you would think that would pass away suddenly. He is survived by his wife, Carrie. We send our hearts out to him. His daughters, Ellie, Molly, and Emma. And he has 6 younger siblings and his mother. He actually, back in 1999, before we started the tea parties and everything else, that was 10 years before that, he started a webpage, which was called Home Pages Directory. And was more than $22 million in publishing. And then he started Open the Books, which exposed a lot of this waste and fraud in government. I hope that there is someone to take over the nonprofit, which is dedicated to ensuring that all Americans can access every dime online in real time. Mm-hmm. So again, our thoughts and prayers go out to his family. And I hope that someone is able to pick up the baton and carry it on. But going back to this Empower Oversight Group, I mean, we see what's going on with Donald Trump with the refiling of these charges by Jack Smith, a man who's labeled as a special prosecutor when he was never confirmed by the Senate. He has no authority, absolutely zero authority. And if you look back at his experience, This isn't even his field of practice. I mean,
and they get away with it. You know, I just don't understand it. How does it stand that he can do this again?
I don't know. But that is what is going on at the moment. Getting back to Kamala Harris, though. She's the gift that keeps on giving. I swear. Here are some of the, what do you call them? Reviews of her performance yesterday in her interview on CNN. By NBC News. I don't know how to pronounce this person's name, but this was on NBC News. Yamichi Alcindor? Alcindor?
Like Lou Alcindor?
I don't know. I'm probably mispronouncing the name. If I am, I apologize, so don't beat me up, folks. This person wrote, Harris keeps saying, my values haven't changed, while not explaining why her positions have changed. NBC News on the left is saying, wait a minute, you're saying your values haven't changed, but yet we see that they have, and you're not explaining why. Okay, Reed Epstein, New York Times, the old gray lady. She ain't what she used to be. Reed Epstein writes, Kamala Harris showed her tendency toward winding answers. Thursday interview was a reminder that unscripted, she can sometimes deliver discursive answers that ramble and zigzag. This is the New York Times. The New York Times can't get any more left than it can. David Axelrod, you know, the former Obama advisor, the wizard behind the curtain. He said, quote, I don't think she moved the ball forward.
Well, they're saying that this is the epit of whatever popularity she's going to have.
The apex?
And it's going to go downhill after this, the more they get to know her and, you know, the policies that she stood for. And now she's against all of a sudden.
All right. The magazine of Martha Graham, the Washington Post, or the newspaper, I should say. You remember Watergate?
Very well.
Matt Visor writes, people are ready for a new way forward, is an interesting comment from Kamala Harris, the sitting vice president. Shall we mention the border? And the borders are Kamala Harris, Queen Kamala Mella? Or as my mom says, Kamala? All right. The New York Times again. Aisted Herndon writes, I don't think there's a policy separation that they've created with Biden. She owns Bidenomics. She owns the Biden policies. Mm-hmm. In other words, you vote her in, you got Biden or worse. Mm-hmm. And I would say probably or worse. And heaven forbid anything happens to her, then you get Tim Walz. That's, oh God. Say goodbye to the Republic. Domenico Montanaro of NPR. And he writes, very simply, there's some cleaning up to do. How telling. How very, very, very telling. Again, New York Times. Again, and if you see the New York Times and ABC and CNN and NPR and Axios put down a bad review for Kamala Harris's interview last night, there's a big problem here, folks. So Nicholas Nahimis writes from the New York Times, Harris may have missed some opportunities, you think? Such as a chance to be specific about her plans for her first day as president. We know what Joe Biden planned. He did it. He canceled the border wall on day one. He opened the border on day one. What's she going to do?
And they shut down the pipeline first day. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's true. That's true. Oh, I mentioned Axios here. Alex Thompson. He writes, quite simply, they basically got through it. Oh, congratulations. You were able to finally do an interview, however poorly. From the Telegraph, Rosina Suber, Kamala Harris still managed to fumble even this cozy chat. I mean, you can't make this stuff up, folks. This is coming from the left. You can't make it up.
So is she still going to debate Trump more than once, or are we still stuck on one?
She can't even confirm the one on September 10th.
Oh, it's not confirmed.
Because the very rules that she put out there, she wanted the same thing as Joe Biden. So they give her the same thing as Joe Biden. But no, she wants to change all that. Even after Trump said, I'll debate you the same way I debated Joe Biden. I'll do the same thing.
Well, the 10th ain't that far away.
Nope. And here we go. Scott Jennings on CNN. And I have to give a shout out to Scott Jennings, because when they had their convention, there was a congresswoman. Her name just escapes me. It's like, to me, it wasn't really important. But she came out with this huge book. It was like about 2.5 feet in length. And it had on their Project 2025 in Bowdoin on the front. And she claimed wrongly that it was authored by Donald J. Trump. No, folks. It was authored by members of the Heritage Foundation. They put together a bunch of experts and they said, we want you to write an essay on what you would do on these various departments within the government to trim down waste. Would you keep them? Would you trim them? Would you get rid of them? And ask them how they would go about doing it. So this is a series of experts, more than a dozen. I think it was like 16 or more, that they said, tell us what you would do to help make government more efficient. It's a Heritage Foundation project, not an extreme right-wing cabal, or whatever you want to call it. They're not a bunch of nut jobs. These are highly intelligent scholars.
Did she ever do a mea culpa? Apologize?
No. But Scott Jennings saw this, and he called it out. And during the convention, broadcasting during the convention, he called it out immediately. And he said, there's a whole series of lies that are being floated around that floor. And he called it for what it was. Scott Jennings, my hat goes off to you. I don't like CNN. It's not the CNN I remember when it was first born as a cable news network. They went so far to the left. I'm hoping they're starting to swing back more towards the center, because that's how they started. They were in the center. And I would sit up, and it was at, I don't know, 2 o'clock in the morning. My late husband and I would sit up and watch it, because they had fair and good coverage. Mm-hmm. But when they drifted off to the left, they lost us, and they lost a lot of the nation. That's why they have the lowest ratings in cable news network. But Scott writes, she offers no remorse, no regrets, no introspection about anything they've done. Boom. He nailed it.
It's about time somebody did.
Well, Scott Jennings, when you're on CNN, I'm turning it on. Keep it up. Keep up the honesty.
You know who I miss? I miss Lou Dobbs. He was on that case. Good.
Mm-hmm. Now, I've done Frank Lutz polls a couple of times. I haven't done one in a couple of years, but I've done a few of them with him. I think because I'm so damn outspoken. I'm such a big mouth. Last one I did was over New York Times. Scott Frank Luntz writes, and I do believe he does lean left, even though he does go on all the news networks. I do believe he does tend to lean left. Mm-hmm. He writes, Kamala Harris was asked a specific question about what she would do on day one if elected as POTUS. Her answer was so vague that it was essentially worthless. Wow.
It was vague.
I mean, if anyone that is watching here, if you're up on Facebook or YouTube or LinkedIn, if you're on any of these that you're watching this, even X, if you post on there your comments, we will see it. So please give us your thoughts as I'm reading these quotes out. And it looks like we've got the ambassador. So that cuts that short. I was having fun beating up on Kamala Harris. Please, Kamala Mella. Or as my mom says in Italian, Kamala which translates in Spanish very much similar. So let's bring on our friend, let me get my little cursor over here, to the show, former Ambassador Stan Escudero. Good afternoon, Stan. How are you today?
Oh, not bad, all things considered. How are you?
I am having fun, right. Fun at Queen Camilla Mella, or as my mom says, Camilla.
Well, I spent a long time in the Middle East, so I sometimes refer to her as Camilla, but never mind.
Oh, no, 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 no. We're not going there.
Great to have you, Ambassador.
Good to see you again, CS.
Yeah, this is a better format than we've had in the past. Now we get to see each other, and as we're talking, we have a better exchange. There's a lot going on in the world, and I swear my head is spinning when I try to wrap it around everything. And it seems like we're getting hit left and right. We've got Iran saber rattling. We've got China with a submarine in Havana Bay. We've got a Soviet warship in Havana Bay. We've got Hamas and Hezbollah, which is trained by Iran and by Moscow, which people don't pay much attention to, which Putin has a hand in, threatening us and threatening Israel. What the heck is going on in this world? And can we make heads or tails? And will Israel be able to survive?
Well, it's a dangerous world, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it has become a lot more dangerous since Mr. Biden became president, and will become more dangerous still if Ms. Harris becomes president in November. But specifically, you asked me about Israel. So let me say unequivocally, yes, provided Iran doesn't develop a nuclear bomb and decide to be stupid enough to use it.
Wow.
Which way do you want to go with this? Do you want me to talk about the proxies or about Iran itself?
I mean, I've done several both. Shows on this, and I got, like I said earlier, I've got kicked off of YouTube 3 times, off of Facebook 3 times. If it's not COVID, it's Israel or China. I've actually had my show cut off in the middle of doing a broadcast about China. But people don't realize that Hezbollah and Hamas, they actually do go to Moscow to get trained, and through the proxy, through Iran, are run. And when you say that, it's like, no, that's not possible. But yet, with this attack on October 7th, we now do see the direct hand of Iran.
Well, yes.
Now, we just need to get people now to trace it back to Putin.
All right. One of the first things you need to understand about Iran and Iranians in general, culturally, with respect to conflict, is that their initial approach to it is, let's you and him fight. They really do like to avoid conflict themselves. There are many aspects of their culture which are arranged and have historically been arranged to avoid direct, face-to-face, person-to-person confrontation. They have others do their fighting for them. And that's what they're doing with respect to Israel and have been doing with respect to Israel ever since they came to power in 1979. It's widely known, it's unquestionably true, that they fund and train not only Hamas, but also Hezbollah in Lebanon, and also elements of the Islamic Jihad and Hamas and others which are present in the West Bank. And these, they provide training and local assistance as a result of the presence of officers and men, experts of the Pasdaran, generally the Al-Quds division of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard. they don't themselves involve Iranian troops or Iranian forces, with the exception of that one massive failed missile attack. And I will get to that in a minute. They prefer, as I say, to have others do their fighting for them. This is both culturally, as I say, appropriate. It's also wise because the Israelis are very good fighters as they have demonstrated a number of times against the combined forces of the Arabs since 1947. Now, with specific respect to Hamas and its attack, I have no doubt that that the Revolutionary Guards trained a great number of the terrorists who crossed the border into Israel to do what they did. I have no doubt that they continue to train and provide weaponry to Hezbollah in Lebanon, particularly certain types of precision-guided missiles. But they do the very same thing more recently for the Houthi in Yemen. The Houthi are an interesting group, just as an aside. They are Shia, but they're not Shia like the Iranians. The Iranians are what they call Twelvers, in the sense that they believe that after the death of the Holy Prophet, there were 12 imams who followed him, and then after the last one became hidden in a basement or a well, or depending on what belief you believe, that he will come back at some point and restore the succession and so forth. The Houthis are also Shia, but they are what are called Fourers, I guess. They're actually called Zaydis. They believe that the fourth imam was the last of the imam in sequence, not 12. And there are others. There are the Ismailis who believe that there were seven, but never mind. They aren't pro-Iranian. They have provided the Houthis also with equipment and training, in part to fight the Sunni Yemenis, whom the Houthis have defeated in recent years, but also to oppose the Saudis, who are also Sunni, and who for religious reasons as well as political ones are opposed to the Houthi. But more recently, they have been firing, as you undoubtedly know, on ships passing through the Red Sea. This is very significant because the Red Sea is one of the most important waterways in the world. At its northern end is the Suez Canal. At its bottom end is the Bab el-Mandab, which is a narrow strait connecting the African continent with the bottom tip of the Saudi Peninsula and Yemen. The Houthis don't think that they can sink all the ships passing through. We obviously can prevent that, and the British can as well. But what they can do is fire often enough and strike often enough so that they raise the cost of shipping and especially the insurance on that shipping to the point where you cannot afford to take ships through the Red Sea anymore. And so the ships now go around the bottom of Africa, which costs more than $1 million more to make it from Europe, say, to the Far East. In this way, they're having the Houthi also conduct fighting, which they would rather not conduct themselves. Now, the Iranians, however, have put themselves in a bit of a box by encouraging the Houthis and training them and assisting them in their October 7 outrage. They made possible the Israeli destruction of Hamas, which is still taking place and which I believe should take place completely to the point where all of Hamas is destroyed.
Eradicated.
Yes. And then then the Israelis can determine what the future of Gaza should be. They appear to be following one of my favorite mantras, which is that no person was ever killed or property destroyed by a dead terrorist. And so you do the needful to make that the situation. With respect to Hezbollah is a greater threat because Hamas was using a lot of homemade rockets and artillery and that sort of thing, which are not particularly accurate and not terribly destructive. Hezbollah, on the other hand, which is a Shia guerrilla group, which basically controls southern Lebanon, is far better armed with artillery, with precision-guided rockets, with many much larger numbers of guerrilla fighters. And as a result of the threat which they pose and the more limited barrages which they have engaged in against Israel, more than 100,000 Israelis have simply been evacuated from northern Israel and towns, farmlands, and that sort of thing are sitting empty at the moment because they cannot be sure when and where Hezbollah missiles might land, even though the Israelis have the Iron Dome and David Sling to protect against that type of thing. These systems are limited. And Hezbollah has vast numbers of these weapons. So far, the two sides have not entered yet a total conflict of the sort that is now winding up between Israel and Hamas, but it remains a possibility. I suspect that on the one hand, the Iranians would like Hezbollah to engage in a larger scale conflict, but on the other, they are afraid because having gotten Hezbollah to do as much as they have done, they have also forced the Israelis to take a closer look at Iran directly, which they had not done in the past, except in certain specific areas. For example, they and we some time ago developed the Stuxnet virus, which severely damaged their nuclear weapons production, their fissile material production. And the Israelis have from time to time assassinated nuclear scientists and other individuals inside Iran who were engaged in the production of a nuclear bomb, because the Israelis are concerned, obviously, being a very small country, that should Iran ever actually develop a nuclear weapon, they would make use of it against Israel, not directly, but by miniaturizing it or otherwise making it available in the short term to someone other than Iran, so that they could claim, at least, when the mushroom cloud went up, that it wasn't them. Of course, but they would attempt plausible deniability. Now, they got into a scrape, which led them to actually act against Israel directly a couple of months ago, when they launched over 300 missiles against the Israelis to show that they actually do have the capacity to strike Israel directly, and much to their chagrin, the Iron Dome and David Sling took out all but one or two of these missiles. Only one of them actually landed, as far as I know, inside Israel. The same has happened with missiles, long-range missiles, which the Revolutionary Guard provided to the Houthi, and they've launched those against Israel, and those two have been intercepted and destroyed. However, the Israelis retaliated. They retaliated by destroying a great deal of the Israeli nuclear development capacity at a town called Natanz, which is not terribly far away from Tehran, in the sort of central western part of the country. They did this with missiles and with aircraft. They were in, they destroyed, they were out, but pretty much before the Iranians even knew they were there, which has to have shaken up the Iranians in the field.
Now, I got
then there was more recently.
Well, I got one question, though. I do seem to remember a number of years ago, Israel hit a mountain using, I believe, a bunker bomb buster, I think it was called.
Moab.
Do they have that capability?
They have cluster bombs. Those are easy enough to manufacture. Whether or not they have deep-reaching bunker-busting bombs, I'm not sure, because they had requested a number of these from the Biden administration, and the Biden administration had refused to give them to them. Since then, there have been some modifications of what the Biden people have been willing to provide to Israel, related more directly to the risk of immediate attacks on Israel now from Iran and elsewhere, and that may have included these heavier bunker buster bombs. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that the ones we have are quite effective. I'll give you an example going back to the first Iraq War, the Desert Storm. In those years, I had been the political advisor at CENTCOM at the time. And during the war, I was the political counsel on our embassy in Egypt. And so we were naturally following the war quite closely. And during that war, Saddam Hussein was afraid that we would kill him. And so he stayed all the time in the same hotel where the journalists were staying at the time, to be sure that we wouldn't go after him directly. And we weren't really trying to. As a matter of fact, instructions were not to seek him out and kill him. But if, on the other hand, he happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, well, gee, that would be such a shame.
Stick his neck out.
Yes. And so
he lost his neck.
We had given him, in the days when we were operating more closely with the Iraqis, we had given him a couple of armored Winnebagos as a present. And one night we found one of them parked outside of a building which we knew included the entrance to a deep underground bunker. And we thought, aha, the man is down there in that bunker. Oh, dear. And so we diverted a mission from the intended target, which had some of our bunker-busting bombs on it, and they dropped a couple of these on that bunker. And we discovered, for example, that armored Winnebagos are destroyed by bunker-busting bombs, and so are our bunkers. However, what we found out later was that we had killed two of his generals and four hardworking ladies of the evening. Ah. Apparently, he had loaned one of his Winnebagos to some of his subordinates, and they were making what they thought was best use of it. So what can I tell you? The bunker-busting bombs work. And so what you've had most recently with respect to Iran and Israel is the decision by the Israelis to kill Mr. Haniyeh, who was the leader of Hamas, when he made the mistake of leaving his sanctuary in Qatar and going to Tehran in order to be present for the inauguration ceremonies of the new Iranian president, who was elected to replace the one who was killed, Mr. Raisi, who was killed in a helicopter accident, apparently a real accident. The Israelis, of course, they're quite capable of killing Mr. Hanafi in Qatar, but they don't want to do that because Qatar is helping with negotiations, and Qatar, as a member of the UAE, is part of the Abraham Accords. There are a number of good reasons for Israel not to take direct action inside of Qatar. However, once Mr. Haniyeh left the sanctuary of Qatar and went to Tehran, he was fair game, except he didn't realize that because he figured, hey, I'm in Tehran, it's a long way away. I'm staying in a carefully protected guest house, which the Iranian government maintains for visiting high mucky mucks. And so he stayed there until such time as the Israelis blew up the guest house, depending on whose story you believe, either by a drone-launched missile or a bomb which they had planted there sometime earlier, planning to use it whenever they thought the time was right. But in any case, Mr. Haniyeh was killed. And because it happened in Tehran, in a place which everyone in Iran thought was safe, the Iranians were receiving a message. And it was from the Israelis, gee, members of the Religious Guidance Council, the Ayatollah Khamenei or others, we can get you if we want you. Mm-hmm. You are not safe anywhere you may go. You want to think about this if you're planning on attacking us again. Mm-hmm. At the same time, the Iranians took a look at the situation in the United States and they thought, gee, maybe Donald Trump is going to win. What happened to us when Donald Trump was president last time? He shut down our economy. And he made it very clear to us that if we tried to do anything about it, there'd be fire and brimstone. And we believe him. So whatever should we do? Well, we certainly, although we said in the beginning that we're going to attack Israel directly, well, maybe we better not do that right now. Maybe we better think about maybe having someone else do it, or even not have them do it too hard. A little exchange of missiles, and we can say that that's good enough for the moment, and we'll do it someday when we get around to it, but we haven't gotten around to it yet. So And so we'll just sort of pull back and we'll sit and wait and we'll attack Israel in our own good time, maybe somehow someday when we think it's smart. But then they said, how do we protect ourselves in the interim? Well, there's a possibility that even the Biden administration might support the Israelis should they hit us, because they're now supplying them with more arms than they were for a while. And they're in the middle of an election, and Kamala Harris is trying to walk a fine line so that she doesn't so anger the pro-Palestinian types that she loses Michigan or Minnesota or some of these other states where they are strong. But she also doesn't so anger American Jewry that she loses a significant level of their votes and their financial contributions, which are always quite large for the Democrats. And so whatever can they do? Well, that means that they might be inclined to provide Israel with the weaponry, maybe even including these bombs, I don't know, which Israel has been asking for in larger amounts to make it easier for Israel to strike Iran should they feel like they want to. So whatever can they do? Well, gee, let's ask the Biden administration if we cannot re-enter negotiations, which the Biden administration have been pressuring them for 3.5 years, to rejoin the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, which is to say the nuclear weapons deal that Obama negotiated with Iran in 2015.
You mean those huge pallets of money that went over to Iran?
That was at the same time, yes. They paid them off with billions of dollars. Much of it shifted from dollars into foreign currency so that they could avoid breaking laws and things like that. It was all very Democrat Party sort of thing. Skirting the law, done behind the scenes, that type of thing.
They never would do that.
From the Democrats in so many different areas. But in this particular case, the Iranians are saying, hey, we'll throw you a bone. We'll get back into this negotiation. We might actually even agree to return to the original terms of the 2015 deal, because we never really exactly left it. You Americans pulled out under Donald Trump, but we've still maintained contacts with the UN inspectors. And even though we sometimes don't show them what they'd like to see, and we have continued to try to develop fissile material and so forth, we can get back into talks. And wouldn't that be nice? And if we did that, wouldn't you maybe not be as supportive of Israel as you seem to about to become? There is, in my view, a fundamental problem with that. If you look at the terms of the original agreement reached in 2015, it was a 10-year deal. At the end of those 10 years, Iran could go ahead and make a nuclear bomb if they wanted to, with the blessing of the international community, because they would have adhered to it for 10 years. Well, 10 years are up next year.
Yep.
And so entering back into that agreement right now, unless somehow it could be extended for another considerable period of time and inspections could be installed, which were really effective, it would be basically meaningless. But it's a step that it's a hollow step that the Iranians are taking, because they are trying to reduce to some degree the element of threat which they think they face. Finally, however, there is the issue of how far have the Iranians gotten toward making a nuclear bomb in all these years? And I don't think anyone knows for sure, but based on the research that I've done, I think they are what you would call about one screwdriver turn away from making a workable nuclear bomb.
Yep. And how much did we leave behind in Afghanistan with the fall of Kabul that they are now using against us?
Tens of billions of dollars worth of military equipment, of which the Iranians can have whatever they want. But I don't think that's related to the making of a bomb. The truth is that any competent physicist with the right engineering equipment and the right fissile material can make a nuclear bomb these days. The technology has been around since 1945.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, Certainly Iran has many very competent physicists, but do they have all the material? Well, they've been making fissile material since well before 2015, and they have the other wherewithal. It would not surprise me to learn that Iran has several nuclear bombs already in a state of virtual complete assembly, such that one could be put together and detonated out in their great central desert, where it wouldn't hurt anything, in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And I think I can promise you that even if they only have one or two, they would claim that they have dozens. And no one would be sure whether they do or not. They would also claim that they have miniaturized them and can put them on the ends of their missiles and that sort of thing. I do not believe that, but it's possible. I could be wrong.
Well, Ambassador, we're down to our last few minutes of the show. I can't believe it. We've got 4 minutes left.
Oh, this is quick. I'm sorry. I was
pontificating. No, we always have fun speaking with you. And I always enjoy hearing from your perspective as ambassador to a lot of these nations that we're talking about. Yeah. And we welcome you back at any time. So, you know,
for an hour.
Cool me.
You need an hour.
Yeah.
No, I'm happy to come on anytime. It's always good to see you, CS. And it's nice to, I think actually this is the first time we've done this on video. Just on the radio before, but it's good to see you in the flesh. So to
speak. I'm not as ugly. I do have a face for TV.
Well, neither of us look as good as we'd like to, let's be honest.
Oh, thanks. That gives a gal a shot in the arm. Well, Stan, is there anywhere that people can reach out to you if they want to ask you questions or anything? Do you have a website or anything like that?
No. I'm just an old broken down bureaucrat. I'm retired.
You're retired.
Those who know me can reach me. They can reach me through Republican clubs in this part. Or I write. Every now and then I see something that I write. I write for the Republicans over here. I don't have a YouTube site or anything like that. I'm not really interested in that much publicity. But I write for my friends and Republican groups here in this part of Florida, just because I still spend a great deal of time and effort following these events. And because I'm retired, I have the time to do that. And others, well, they've got their own lives to live.
Well, I got to tell you, I recently got remarried and my husband is from Cuba. And his father actually was running the officers club in Gitmo. So you've got some pals up here. But I want to thank you, Stan, for joining us. And like I said, anytime, always just reach out to CS and we'll get you back on ASAP.
Oh, sure. All right. I'd love to.
All right. Thank you.
You guys take care.
All right. Take care.
All right. We're down to our last, about a minute and a half left. We'll be back on Friday, next Friday. We have Kaitlyn Wheeler. She is one of the ambassadors for the Riley Gaines Center at the Leadership Institute. And I do believe we may have also Mary Zeller also with us. So I'm waiting for that confirmation. But we got ourselves a great show lined up for next week. And I want to thank everyone that's been listening on all of our social networks, as well as on our main page, which I stopped looking at because I'm so fascinated with what this ambassador was saying. Yep. Okay. Thank you for everyone that was up on our webpage, as well as listening in on all the social networks like Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, X, and so forth. We will be up on Big Patriot Radio on tomorrow. They rebroadcast us over on BigPatriotRadio.com. So, Curtis, that's it. That's all we got for today.
It was a lot. A lot to digest.
Yeah, and we don't even have enough to play our show ending. I love it when the show just flows, even though I didn't have a single note written down this time.
You don't need one with the ambassador.
Or with my memory. So again, I want to thank everyone for watching and listening and joining us. And we will be back next Friday, same bat time, same bat station. I say thank you, good night, and God bless.
Be safe.